afternoon, and welcome to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across the street from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to discuss with you any shooting-related needs that you might have, any concerns you have about making a firearms purchase, taking firearms training, whatever the case might be. A couple things I want to let our listeners in on. If you have something that you want, you better either go get it where you can find it or get your order in now, because just as an example, just yesterday, Ruger just issued a correspondence to all wholesalers and FFL dealers that they are, get this number, 1 million guns behind in production. Now, that's bad in the one sense, but because Ruger's such a great company, they said, we hope to be caught up by the end of May. But wow. 1 million guns down, and they are producing them faster than they possibly can. It's pretty amazing. I went to a seminar at a conference that I attended in January, and the chief executive officer of Ruger was there, and he assured everybody that they are at maximum production plus. They obviously are faced with a dilemma like other companies that are experiencing growth. They have to decide between building or investing in additional infrastructure or just trying to most optimally utilize what they have, and they've decided to go with utilizing what they have and putting on extra shifts, doing the best they can to meet the need, because at any time the rush could slow down and then they have to justify that initial or that increased investment in infrastructure. But Ruger, a top-notch company, like several of the others, Smith & Wesson, Sig Sauer, Glock, all the major manufacturers are kind of faced with the same issue. And I will tell you, as many people have found out recently, if you want a black rifle, an M4 AR-15 variant rifle, if you see one, you better get it, because they are extremely difficult to come by. Now, there are a lot of reasons for that. I think it's just kind of a natural trend right now because of the way some of the political situation is looking at the present time. Some of it could just be people want to get something that they feel that they may not be able to get down the road. Whatever the case might be, if you have an interest in a particular firearm, you need to start looking into that now and start doing your research to find out where it's at. And when you have an opportunity to get it, you better get it, because they are hard to come by. And that's trickling down to what used to be very common firearms. So the manufacturers are doing their best to stay up with the demand, but you need to take care of yourself and get what you need. We have a limited stock of firearms that we make available to our membership. And if any of our members are listening, if you have a particular need, make sure that you send us an email and let us know that need, and we'll try to get you in line for what it is that you're interested in. If you want to get on the air today, I want to encourage you to call us at 457-1290. That's 457-1290. We'd be more than glad to discuss any interests you have. We ended last week's show talking about the situations that continue to present themselves around the country, where we have armed, active aggressors in various environments. And then an example we were talking about last week up in the Chardon High School, where armed gunmen go in and wreak havoc on innocent populations. And the discussion last week centered around what are we going to do to minimize that from being as devastating as it can be. And we've come up with a number of options. There are some pretty noteworthy individuals, significantly well-written individuals with experience in law enforcement and in guns in general and in training, who have offered that there are some things that we can do as parents to better teach our kids on how to respond. And I want to direct you to the Buckeye Firearms Association website for articles written by Greg Elifritz over the last couple months, where he's talked about some of those issues or some of those things that you can advise your students. But I want to kind of direct the discussion back to where we ended last week and coming up with, I think, some more applicable options, in that we have to have, again, I've mentioned this many times, we have to have ready, willing, and capable armed personnel on the premises when situations happen so that they can immediately respond and neutralize and eliminate the threat. point, period, paragraph, end of conversation, as far as I'm concerned. And I think that we continue to put our head in the sand when we're coming up with Band-Aid fixes to big problems. And I know under in times of fiscal crises and limited budgets, they've got to come up with some creative options. And I think that one of the most obvious options is that we have to train school staff, whether it's administrative staff, teachers, civilian employees, whoever it might be, people that are ready, willing, and ultimately capable to carry guns and be willing to respond in situations and help to neutralize active gunmen in those situations. And it's not only schools. There are situations around the country or locations around the country where gunmen have gone into workplaces, and you know, many workplaces. I'm just aware of two that I've talked with personnel recently, where they have security staff who sit at the front desk, and the security staff are unarmed. Now, the unfortunate reality is, when you get a security staff in uniform, a security officer in uniform, that individual becomes a primary target because bad guys don't differentiate them from police officers, and those are the potential individuals who may stand in their way, so they're going to be targeted. And from a personal perspective, I find it difficult that to believe that anybody would don a uniform and put themselves in a security capacity in most of those environments, understanding that, you know, there's little to nothing they can do. The idea is when they see problems coming, when they see the problem coming, if they see it, they're going to notify law enforcement. I think that's an option. There's no question that notifying law enforcement is an option, and it's proven to be a good option in some cases. But the problem with that is that in many cases, as we found out, the violence is over by the time we arrive on the scene, and the harm is either pretty extensive or ongoing, and then we have to intervene and take corrective measures to neutralize the threat and then bring the situation to some semblance of stability and order. We put the pieces together after the fact too many times, and you can look at incident after incident after incident, whether it's schools, workplace, courthouses, whatever the case might be. Most of the time we respond as law enforcement and we put the pieces together after the fact. So where do we go from here? Mark, I want you to jump in here. And I know that you've got opinions about these things. We've talked back and forth. You've obviously got a different perspective. Mine's coming from law enforcement and from years of talking with these people. Yours is more from, you know, military background and civilian world. Chide in.
Well, I think that it's really difficult when you have a society that has lost touch with what it meant to be an armed society, what it meant to have responsible citizens carrying firearms on a regular basis as a normal part of their daily lives. We've lost that in this country. That used to be the way it was all the time. You were expected, during the earliest parts of this country, you were expected to be armed. Pastors would stand at the door of their church and check to see whether or not the men coming in had their firearms with them. Not because they were trying to keep them out, but because they were wanting to make sure that they were responsibly armed so that should something happen during the church service, should they be notified of something that happened while they were sitting in the church service, that they would be able to, right from there, go, and they had their musket or their rifle, and they had their ammunition with it. They had their ball and their powder and their all the things that they needed to go along with it in order to be able to take care of a situation, to be able to respond immediately when that occurred. They recognized that they were under risk, that they were under threat, that there was unrest in the area, that there was a British government that was trying to put them, make them be the subjects that the British thought they should be. And there was a country that was feeling the oppression of that and wanting to do its own thing, the colonies not wanting to follow that British rule. That was the situation that this country was birthed under, and the situation under which the words for the Second Amendment were penned. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So what has happened since then? We have lost way too much of that. We have allowed other people, like the police, like our military, to be the folks who are the dangerous individuals, the ones who are willing to carry arms and to do what's necessary at the point of crisis, and to defend others who no longer feel a need to be responsible for themselves. That's a mistake. That is a serious mistake, and the only way we can correct that is to start to communicate and to let people realize, look, this is not something that's somebody else's job to take care of you. We have become a cared-for people all too many times. You look back even to the expansion of our country across the plains. People were self-sufficient. They had to be. There was nobody else to rely on. Unfortunately, we've lost too much of that. So what happens now when you're in a city and you're in an environment where things are reasonably civilized, and then it starts to go downhill, where some of that civilization starts to get frayed around the edges, and there are people, a larger percentage of people, who are willing to do harm in order to get what they want from you? We're not prepared to deal with that. We're not prepared to get our brains around that. We have had a failure of imagination. Just as we had with 9/11, just as we said, oh, I can't believe that they did that. Well, that's a failure of imagination. People hear of these shootings in schools and other violent confrontations, and they say, that doesn't happen in our city. Well, unfortunately,
time and time again,
it does. And if you are not willing to acknowledge the fact that it is not only a possibility, but it is becoming more and more likely, then it's easy to see why you wouldn't recognize keeping and bearing arms as an essential requirement of responsible citizenship. Until people are willing to get their brains around that, we're going to have this same discussion, and it will be a discussion of logic versus a response from emotion. And it's very difficult to bridge that gap until you can make an emotional word picture that gets people to feel what's going on instead of trying to understand it logically. I think that's situations like what happened in Chardon starts to turn that emotional switch. And then we need to be ready as responsible citizens to say, look, there is another way to deal with this kind of situation, to have people prepared. Now, does that necessarily mean that the first response would be to shoot this kid that had the gun? Not necessarily, but the fact that they would know that there are armed people there changes the entire process, changes the decision process that says, what should I do to get my attention? How should I go about responding to these people that I think are disrespecting me or are treating me badly or I want to get back at for some reason? If somebody thinks that they can do that with a firearm with impunity without putting themselves at any risk because they're the only ones with a gun, that makes them much more likely to move in that direction. And for people who aren't in that mode and people who realize that they could be at dangerous risk if that's the approach that they decide to take, then that changes the way they approach the problem. And maybe what Robert A. Heinlein said really becomes true. An armed society is a polite society. If people are designed, have to realize that they have to back up their words with their life, maybe they'll be a little bit more careful about how they deal with people. That's not an exact quote. That's the Avery transliteration from something that he said much more concisely. We need to take our first break of the hour. If you'd like to be on the show and join this discussion, please call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number in here, and Justin Phelan will take your call and get you up on the board. We would love to hear what you have to say about these things. We do have some other things as well that we'll be talking about. Stay with us, and if you'd like to be part of it, give us a call in the studio. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and right before the break, Mark gave you a pretty good overview of what I knew he would be so eloquently able to talk about when he's talking about how we've got to change our mindset. And one thing I just wanted to mention, when you talk about law enforcement response, and for many years people have thought that that transition naturally occurred. I don't know when it was, but all of a sudden law enforcement assumed the responsibility for personal safety. And I think that's it's a pretty insurmountable task. I know that administrators don't like when I say that, but the bottom line is we as individuals are responsible for our own safety. Certainly law enforcement does a lot to try to deter criminal activity. And I think we've done a great job. And I'm also ever so thankful of the sacrifices that law enforcement officers around the country make to work the shifts 24 hours a day and to do the things they have to do to make us safe. But the bottom line is we're responsible for our own safety, and we need to take that serious. And let's just go out to the phones. We have Gary from Dayton. You have a question for us, Gary.
Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Gentlemen, love the show. Thanks for taking my call. Gentlemen, my love for firearms started after I got drafted. The M14 and the 45, of course. But a weapon I got a lot of respect for is the M1 carbine. Now, I've been hearing a lot of stuff so much that it's almost like urban myth that the government has taken possession of, a large number of M1 carbines that were destined for South Korea. Are they going to go up for sale?
Well, it's actually the other way around. The Koreans have an arsenal of weapons that were used during the conflict there, and they're trying to return them back to the U.S. U.S. has first opportunity. They're actually ours. They were on loan to them, and they have to send them back to us. They can't send them anywhere else. Unfortunately, we haven't been willing to accept them yet. The State Department has refused to acknowledge them or to allow them to be received. There is an awful lot of discussion going on about that, and there is historians and those who love firearms just for the art and the technology that they are and the history that they provide want those guns to be placed in the hands of responsible citizens. The anti-gun community is saying, oh, we can't have all these terrible guns because they're going to cause people all kinds of danger. And, you know, the last thing we need in this country is more guns. Obviously, that's their position on everything having to do with firearms. The reality is we need to deal with that question rationally, and they are, in fact, historical. They're tremendous value. We could bring these guns back, sell them to people who are interested in them. There's M1 carbines, and there's also the M1 Garand, many of both of those. And so what we really need to do is to get the State Department to recognize that there is no inherent danger with that. The Civilian Marksmanship Program has been doing that for years with firearms and distributing them to people who have a desire to purchase them. And I think that's what we need to do. But no, it's not something that they're quarantined here. They just haven't come back yet.
Well, you know, gentlemen, when I was in school, we had shooting teams.
Yes.
I would think that would be the ideal way to get responsible gun ownership and respect for weaponry back in the schools.
Yeah, see, there you go, trying to make sense out of it again. I agree with you. I mean, I couldn't agree more, but unfortunately, that's not where our government is right now. And we have an election coming in November, and that's an issue that people need to be aware of and need to roll into their decision on who do they want to represent them. And I'm not just talking about the presidential election. That goes right down to the various lowest levels, all the way from the city on up through the state General Assembly and up to the representatives in Congress. We as citizens need to pay attention and make sure that the people that we hire and select and elect to go into those positions have the right mindset and are going to do what they ought to do. Gary, thanks very much for calling the show. We're going to need to take a break at the bottom of the hour for the news. But before we do that, let me tell you about something that's going on here. We'd like you to nominate a superior nurse in your community. The Dayton Daily News is putting together a salute to nurses, and you can nominate your nurse at www.daytondailynews.com/salute to nurses. The nominations are going to be announced in May with the National Nurses Week publication inserted in the Dayton Daily News, the Springfield News Sun, and the Hamilton News Journal and Middletown Journal, and online at daytondailynews.com. So the Dayton Daily News, salute to nurses. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. Another comment I wanted to make, reference to the earlier discussion we were having about safety in our society and individuals being responsible for our own safety. I think it's important to note that over the last 4 to 6 years, there's been, and maybe even longer than that, there's been a significant decrease, hear me right, decrease in violent crime in our society. And it's interesting that there's a direct correlation with increases in numbers of civilians that are armed. And I know there's other factors. And again, great efforts on the part of law enforcement But I think target hardening by individuals who are quite frankly sick of criminals preying on them, and the fact that criminals now have to think twice about coming up against more difficult targets who are armed, and not only that, but they're willing to use their firearm in defense of themselves or others. And that situation has played out, and we've reported a couple incidents that have occurred in the greater Dayton area over the last year where thugs, criminals, thought they were going to use very forceful, violent means to rob, beat other individuals who pulled their firearm and used their firearm either out in public or in their home to defend themselves. And there's been positive outcomes, and we've made significant progress along those lines. But it's important to note that there is a corresponding there's a correlation there between the decrease in crime and the increased number of people having guns. So the anti-gun people who try to say that there's going to be chaos in the streets, that certainly hasn't played out. A lot of the other negative things that they mentioned, such as when the restaurant carry provision went into effect in I believe it was September of last year, that hasn't proven to be an issue, and we don't think it's going to be. Because the bottom line is, as Mark and I mentioned, responsible people do responsible things. Now, that being said, everybody can cite specific exceptions to that. And I know when Mark talked earlier about law enforcement officers and military personnel being willing to take the fight to the people who need the fight, there's always exceptions where they falter. And we've been well aware of situations where military personnel and law enforcement officers have had negative things, negative consequences, or negative actions have occurred where they've used firearms to their detriment, to the detriment of people around them.
And not just necessarily firearms, could also be just the power of their authority.
Exactly, exactly. And there certainly are those cases. But the overwhelming majority, I've been in this profession for 30 years. The overwhelming majority of officers out there are doing the right thing most of the time, and they're well-intentioned, and they do. Here's what's real interesting about police officers. They go to the call of gunfire. When bad things happen, they don't run away. They go to the call of gunfire, and they go there expecting to have to neutralize the threat, engage in a confrontation of some sort, and to take decisive action in order to protect you, the citizens of the communities that we police. And that's a characteristic in our armed our military. They go around the world doing the same thing, protecting the world as we know it and the rights that we have in this country. And it's a tough situation. And I heard someone the other day talking about service, courage, and sacrifice that our armed personnel use as kind of their trilogy of commitments they make. And it's a serious responsibility, and they take it seriously. They do the right thing most of the time, and it plays out to our benefit.
That, I think, is also when you look at the people who are citizens then who are armed and you say, well, okay, now what happens? We have several examples of people who have done exactly what they're supposed to do. The armed citizens reports where people have done what was necessary at the time. This whole thing, this whole discussion today and last week got started based on the Chardon High School and some of the other events that have happened recently. How could that have been different had there been someone there who was trained, armed, properly equipped, properly trained, and with the right motivation to do what's necessary to stop a dangerous situation? How could that have affected what happened at Columbine? What happened in many of the other situations where instead of having the schools be completely disarmed zones, places where only victims exist, what would have happened had we instead had people who recognized that there was a potential threat and had done what was necessary to prepare for that and to deal with it? We have several churches in the area, none of which we're going to name right now, but several which have said, we recognize there's a threat. We have seen what's happened in places like the New Life Center in Colorado Springs and in several churches throughout the country where there have been lethal attacks, either by people who had a grudge against someone in particular or just because they had a mission that they wanted to accomplish that included hurting Christians, hurting people of whatever faith. And so the churches have said, we recognize that although the law prohibits by default carrying of firearms, we've decided that we are going to grant permission by either some or all of our members to carry firearms in our facility. And oh, by the way, we're going to organize a team who's going to get trained, and they are going to get the preparation that they need, the practice dealing with situations, the plan to deal with a situation, so everybody knows what they're supposed to do, where they're supposed to go, where they should be when a certain thing happens, and who's supposed to call 911, and who's supposed to do whatever other things that they're supposed to do to prepare for and deal with the situation that could occur. They're not expecting that situation to occur, but they're not in denial that it can. And they recognize that there's a potential, and they want to be prepared for it.
And Mark, the key thing there, and I want to kind of switch gears just a little bit, is they've recognized that they can't rely on their emotional intuition there, and they got to rely on the realities of the situation and the way they present themselves. And I want to bring that up because just on the last, what you said earlier in the show, and then on the last break, there was a blurb about the police chief in Sanford, Florida, getting death threats last night on the Fox News. There was indication that the individual, the shooter in that particular incident, was a better fear for his life. It was a particular group that I'm not going to mention here that threatened that he better watch himself. They're relying on emotion, and I want to direct our listeners that in. Because that situation, the Trayvon Martin situation in Florida right now is directly and indirectly related to a lot of the things that we talk here. But when we talk about emotion gathering or gearing people's decision making, that's a classic example. And I want to direct our listeners to a website. If they want to get some factual data in that particular case, I want to direct you to
I've put the link up on our Facebook page. So rather than have to give the long URL, which would I even got messed up when I put it in the first time. If you just go to sim-trainer.com/radio and click on our Facebook link, that will take you to our Facebook page. And right at the top of the Facebook page is the shooting from the hip. I've just posted a link that says, you think you've heard the whole story on the Trayvon Martin shooting? Yeah, maybe not so much. And there's a link there to a summary page that has links to the police reports.
And I want you to take the time to read through those reports. And something else I want to let you know about this whole process. As a career law enforcement officer, when police officers respond to crime scenes, we have an acronym that we teach the recruits. And I was taught way back in the early 80s that when you respond to a crime scene and you conduct a preliminary investigation, picture the word preliminary, and I'm going to use it as an acronym, and I want to just give you an idea. When you talk about do the police respond properly, real quickly, the P stands for proceed to the scene with safety. In other words, you get there and you don't get in an accident and cause another problem. The second is you render aid, and in this particular case, the initial officers there attempted CPR on the deceased subject. The E is you effect the arrest of individuals involved in the crime, and even though it hasn't been widely reported, the shooter in this particular case was physically arrested, taken to the police department. He was interviewed on the scene. He was interrogated later at the police department, and then based on the information, he was released when the determination was made that there was not a probable cause to detain him. So the E is to the effect the arrest of the perpetrator, alleged perpetrator. The L in preliminary stands for locate victims, witnesses, and suspects. The I is to interview them. The M is to maintain control of the scene, and in the police report that you read in the link that Mark provided you, you'll see that one of the second or third officers on the scene, once the scene was secured, he immediately set up a perimeter by setting up a crime scene tape to secure that scene so that the investigators would have a safe and a sanitized scene to work when they got there. The second I in preliminary is for interrogate suspects. And I told you, when they get back to the police department, and it's mentioned also in the supplemental report of the second officer, he was interrogated not by the initial officer, that's not his job, but by the follow-up detective who was assigned to the case. The N in the preliminary is note all circumstances for future reporting. Arrange for the collection of evidence is the A, which they did. The actual gun used in this particular incident was logged into the property room. The R stands for report the incident fully and entirely, and the Y stands for yield to detectives. Now, that's kind of a real quick summary, but what I want to emphasize is that before we go out criticizing law enforcement and the way they do things, let's try to get some factual data. And because of the way this investigation has to proceed, and because of the fact that certain information can't be released for the integrity investigation, there's a lot of people relying on emotion rather than fact. And all I was trying to do here, because I'm very interested in this case and from a number of different ways, I want people just to start looking at factual data and holding off on judgment. We've mentioned that so many times. There have been incidents here in Ohio in the last year so, where we've encouraged people just hold off on the emotion and rely on facts and wait and see how it plays out.
People get uncomfortable when that information is not readily available and not released. And as Jeff mentioned, it's not releasable. Nature abhors a vacuum, and they want to fill the gap with assumptions and trying to fill in, you know, what is it that possibly happened, and they make conjecture and so forth. And that's where we get into trouble, because we don't know the situation. Now this report has been released. If people haven't seen that yet, I certainly haven't heard it reported in the news anytime, what's in that report. I think it's pretty instructive, and it may be worth reading. So there is a link to that on our Facebook page. Let's go back out to the phones and talk to Bob, who wants to talk about protecting schools, the topic that we opened with this afternoon. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. You're doing a great job on the radio program, and you do a great job at Sim Trainer. My wife and I have both taken courses down there, and we're going to get into some more courses. But what I want to bring up is, you remember after 9/11, the federal air marshals were allowed to go on planes. They were in civilian clothes, and they were armed. And just the possibility of having an armed marshal on the plane made people feel safe and was a deterrent to what was going on at that time. Now, I don't know what's happened in the 10 or 11 years since that time on armed air marshals on flights, but in the, you know, you brought up the Chardon issue, the Columbine issue, and none of the schools in this country allow any of their employees to be armed, and I believe that's due to, you know, opposition by the NEA, National Education Association, you know, the union behind the teachers.
Sure.
And, of course, all of the teachers have passed background checks. You know, they have clean records. All of them could qualify, you know, with the appropriate training and such to have a concealed carry permit. And just the idea that a person on the school grounds was trained, had a concealed carry permit, and could be there to defend people would eliminate a lot of thought on the part of criminals or perpetrators in going on to a school ground. They look at, I think the criminals look at school grounds like it's a target-rich environment. They're free from any threat of violence to themselves, so they can then foist that violence onto our students. Same way with libraries and, you know, other venues out there where people are just targets because they cannot have any appropriately designated concealed carry permits for anybody in those facilities.
Bob, you bring up a lot of valid points, and the one I just want to comment on real quickly is that Mark so often refers to those areas as gun-free zones, which absolutely benefit the criminals because they know there's no guns there, so there's not going to be much opposition, and we need to change the tide in the way of thinking, and that's what the air marshals did, and quite frankly, I don't think we need to know what they've done since then. We know that what they're doing is working pretty darn good, and they're doing a variety of things. They found a few examples or a few situations, and they've thwarted a number of attacks.
We need to take our last break for the hour. When we come back, we'll finish up this discussion. If you'd like to be part of it, call the studio at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Thank you, Uncle Ted. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. And before we run out of time here, let's go right back out to the phones and talk to Bill, who's calling in. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you all today?
We are doing fine.
Well, I've been a lifelong member of the IRA, and I'm originally from Montana.
Of the IRA?
The
NRA?
National Rifle Association.
Okay, NRA, okay.
And I'm from Montana, and up there we're always strapped. And
sure.
I'm retired military down here now.
Okay.
And it's mind-boggling that you know, people don't arm themselves, stuff like that. Someone breaks in your house, and people stand there, and they, you know, they don't do it, and they're like sheep. They want the government to take care of everything and stuff like that. It's just... That's mind-boggling to me.
Well, Well, it's a totally different mentality. There's a show on TV, I think it's How the States Took Their Shapes, and there were people in Montana and Wyoming, and there was a gun range right next to a supermarket, and the people hosting the show thought that was odd, and the people out there said, well, what's odd about it? I go get my groceries, leave them in my car, and go get 50 rounds and go home, and I have a great day. People out there have a totally different mentality.
That's the way it is. I mean, out where I live up there, but eloquent condition forces me to stay down here. So.
Sure. Sure.
That's the way it is. If people would arm themselves and everybody knew that every house in Dayton had a weapon, people wouldn't be getting broken into.
Well, that would certainly change the dynamic of the situation, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd voice my little piece there.
Great. Thanks very much for calling the show.
Thank you very much.
He's exactly right. And that's something that we as citizens can be messengers to those around us who don't understand that message yet. You know, at some point, we may well have to defend ourselves. And what is it that you're going to use to defend yourself? One of the discussions that we had at the end of last week is somebody who had three times when he had to defend himself against a firearm, and he did not have a firearm, and he came through those just fine. And, you know, that's great. And if you have a firearm, it doesn't mean you necessarily need to use it. What it means is that you have one more option for how to deal with a dangerous situation. It gives you an option when nothing else works, when there's no way to avoid the confrontation, when the deadly threat refuses to be dissuaded by logic or by some other means, just walking away. Sometimes they won't allow you to walk away. They're going to do what they want to do. And unless you have some means to defeat them, there is not any way that you're going home safely.
Right.
It is your choice. It is something that you need to, as an individual, decide. If it's somebody else or me, it's not going to be me.
Having the firearm and being willing to use it in appropriate situations is both a direct and indirect benefit to individuals, and we need to understand that, especially as parents with kids in the schools. I know that up in Chardon, I mentioned last week, within a couple of days, the superintendent of the school and the principal both said it's safe for your kids to come back to school. Well, my first question would be, what measures have you taken to make my kids safe? And I want to hear specifics. I don't just want to hear the same old rhetoric. Well, we're going to be watching. We're going to do this. We're going to do that.
Yeah, close the door. Well, the doors were already closed.
Yeah.
We're going to have bigger staff. That just doesn't do it. If somebody has a gun, it doesn't matter how physically large the coach is that's in the cafeteria. If some kid has a .22, the coach is toast. Size isn't relevant when you're talking about something like that.
And if it's a temporary fix where they have an armed security guard on the premises for the week after or the month after, and then all of a sudden he's gone, you know, we have to change the way we think. And again, I want to direct our people, if you want to hear some good information, I want to direct you to a book called On Killing and On Combat. There's two separate books, actually, by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, who talks about some of the dynamics and the mindset of some of these individuals and puts it in perspective and mentions the concept of sheep versus sheepdog, which is very applicable.
Well, thanks very much, everyone, for being part of the show today. We are out of time, and so we would like to invite you to stick around after the news at the top of the hour for There Is a Season with Bob Wolf and Gloria Shanahan. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.